The opinions and views shared in this podcast are the opinions and views of the host and the host alone. They are not a reflection of his employer or any other organization that the host is a member of. The host does not speak for anyone, only himself.
This is the I Am Pith Podcast. Get ready for contact.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is your boy Dex with the I Am Pith Podcast, and we are back for another great interview today. I'm happy to be back for another episode. Told you I've been kind of laying low key because it has been an absolute madhouse in my life and an absolute madhouse in the state of Kentucky, because I'm sure everybody knows it was the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby. Everybody was super excited for it except the police. But now that time has come and gone, so we are now back trying to get our lives back together. And I'm kind of on a normal schedule now, so I figured with some time, I bring some other people onto the show and the podcast I've been wanting to have on for a while. So we are here. And while we're at it, I'm going to go ahead and apologize if we have any sort of interference issues, because the internet in my location is awful and we have rain right now. And so there might be some technical difficulties going on. If so, please forgive us. But hopefully, because I have a chaplain coming on to the podcast, hopefully Jesus comes with him and fixes the atmospherical issues that we're having and the issues through all things crisis. Because through all things with Christ, you know, all things are possible. So, man, so that's one thing I need to say about this profession. One thing we don't do enough of, we do not recognize the people in this profession that help us stay sane. And the people that come to comfort us, because as police officers, we're big, manly men, and we got some women out there that are just absolute animals, just like us. And we are so used to being the ones to treat people and run to people. We're so used to being the heroes, and we are so used to being the people that don't need help from anybody. But the crazy thing about this profession is we are able to step into everybody else's lives, and we are able to fix their issues. Problems while our own lives are falling apart at the seams. And we have people within the police department that are dedicated to officers deal with everything that they see on the streets, cope with emotions, feelings, cope with the big questions that we all have all the time. I've had these questions of, why would God let somebody let this happen to this child? Why would God let this happen to this good person? Because we see the evil that is in the world and what evil does to people. We see what evil does to innocent children, innocent men and women. We see what evil does on a daily basis. But I know I'm not the only one that's had that question of, why does God let this happen? I've had that question for myself in life, like, why did you let this happen to me, God? And I remember when I was with my mother in my police uniform after she had killed herself, having our police chaplain there and just there to comfort me. And although at that point in time, I didn't appreciate it, as I've been in this profession for 15 years, I now appreciate our police chaplains more than ever, because they don't get any of the glory. They're behind the scenes doing work that people don't see. And most times they're on your homicide scenes. They're always around, but they don't ever get any of the shine. Today, I wanted to bring on a police chaplain that I've been talking to now for probably about over a year. I've been telling them I'm going to have it on my show forever. And life has been so crazy and busy, and I tell him, I forgot about you, chap. I forgot about you. You know, I almost didn't do it because he lives close to the Kansas City area, and he's around the Chiefs, and I don't like the Chiefs, so you know, it is what it is. As a 49er fan, I'll forgive him for that. But with that, I'm gonna go ahead and bring on police chaplain Jared Altick.
Hello, Dexter, how are you,
chap? How you doing, man? How you doing? So good to see you, have you on the podcast.
Go Chiefs.
and the interview was over. I think that one of the unforgivable sins. Being a Chiefs fan.
Hey, we went 50 years between Super Bowls there for a while. That was a pretty rough spell, but it's much better nowadays.
It is. And you know what? Y'all owe us a favor too, as a 49er fan. Y'all took my quarterback from me, Joe Montana, back in the early 90s.
Yeah. So yeah.
We tried to help y'all, but y'all dropped the ball on that when y'all fumbled it. Man, so for those that don't know, he is the host of the Hey Chaplain podcast. Mm-hmm. Freaking great podcast. I was on there about last year, man, and he does a lot of wonderful stuff with his podcast. talks to cops and gets a lot of cops to open up about stuff they don't typically open up to. So, Chaplin, how long have you had the podcast going now?
Oh, I'm going on 3 years, going into my fourth year.
Years going through
about 130 year. Episodes or so.
I tell people it's a job, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a job. It's definitely a job. It takes a lot. It takes a lot of time and preparation. You know, but I'm glad people like you doing it though.
Yeah, I see my whole life as kind of a Russian nesting doll. My full-time job is in the church, and that's 6 days a week. I'm really on call 24/7 with the church responsibilities. I preach and I teach adult classes. I do counseling. I do all that kind of thing. And then within that, I also volunteer as a police chaplain, which we'll talk about more later. And that's almost like a full-time job. And so I do a lot with that. But then within that responsibility is the podcast, where I figure a lot of 25-year-old cops are not going to come talk to the chaplain, but they might listen to the chaplain talk to another cop. You know, when it's 4 o'clock in the morning and the night shift is kind of dying down, maybe they'll put that earbud in and listen to me talk and give a little bit of wisdom.
Absolutely. Hopefully this doesn't turn into a counseling session, because I don't want you billing my insurance. Can you promise me that?
I am not EAP. I do not have to report any of this to your department. Right.
Awesome, man. So said, you know, before we start, let's kind of just take it all the way back to the beginning. Tell the people where you're from.
Okay, so I'm from the Kansas City area, specifically Lawrence. And so not only am I an obnoxious Chiefs fan, I'm also an obnoxious KU basketball fan. And so that's kind of my neck of the woods. I've lived here most of my life, and I've been at a church in Kansas City, Kansas for almost 24 years. And so I'm one of those rare pastors that, you know, stay in one place for a long time. So I've had a lot of cops in my church over the years, a lot of military too, because we're close to Fort Leavenworth. And so I've had these first responder families and military families in my church. And frankly, as a young pastor, I made a lot of mistakes. I didn't understand the type of stress they were in and the relationship that the people in the military and in law enforcement had, you know, the relationship they had to their jobs and relationship their family had to those jobs, and how different that was from the plumber and the banker and whoever else. And so I kind of had to learn the hard way. But as I learned to minister to these families and really care for them and support them well, I grew to really love police officers. And I'm not from a law enforcement family. I have no experience in it personally, but I just kept befriending these people and they kept sharing with me. And I think the tipping point for me, because I had several people say early on, you should become a chaplain. And I was like, I don't really have any interest in that. I didn't think. But the tipping point for me was death notifications. And I found out that our young officers and detectives were going and doing death notifications. And as a minister in a church, I'm doing funerals all the time, and I'm around, you know, funerals and grieving families. And I've been on scene with, you know, suicides and homicides and other things. And so I felt like, boy, I can do that. And so let me take that off of their plate. I can't do most of their job, but I could certainly go make death notifications. And so I got into it really with that in mind primarily. And that is something I still specialize in. Whenever our sheriff's office or our police department has a death notification, I ask them to call me and I will make the first contact. I'll make the notification and then I'll hand it over to the detective to, you know, give whatever other information they have for the family. And I would rather take that on as, you know, a pastor in my 40s than have that on a 30-year-old detective and, you know, add that to all the other stress they have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And can I tell you, thank you enough for doing that, because this job is hard enough. And I tell the one thing we do in this day and age for policing is we continue to stack the plates of officers with more and more responsibilities that are not our responsibilities. And so anytime somebody comes along and they're like, hey, let me take this burden from you, I'm like, hey, guys, drop your pride. Let the people help. Let the man help. Let the man notification, you know?
Yeah. Nowadays, I actually teach doing death notifications in the police academy. And I tell him, like, look, here's how you do it. If for some reason you can't get a hold of me or you can't get a hold of another chaplain, here's how to do it correctly. Here's, you know, all the mistakes that you could make. Let's avoid all of these terrible things that people say at funerals and at death notifications. You know, God needed another angel. Wait a second. God killed my loved one? What are you saying? You know, you want to avoid all of those things. But in that teaching, I tell them, I'm like, just call me. Just call me and I'll come do it. And you just stand there and look official, and I'll do the interaction with the family. And so that's just better. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, man. So before you even got into policing as a police chaplain, growing up, were you heavily involved in the church at all? Or were you a lot of people know that they were completely nothing to do with church, and then they just found themselves in ministry. What was your upbringing like religiously?
Yeah, my parents brought me to church. We were there. If the doors were open, my parents were there. And so we didn't have any clergy in our family, but we had a lot of very religious farmers. You know, these are, you know, country folk that you know, they had to take care of things because they were in mostly small churches. And so they did everything from, you know, turning the lights on and the heat on to vacuuming the carpet, you know, preparing communion, whatever else they had to do. And so that's the family I grew up in, was just, hey, this is just part of our responsibility, is that we take care of things in the church. And then I went to Bible college, and I didn't think I was going to go. I actually had, when I was a little kid, I had a preacher tell me that I was going to be a preacher someday. And I'm like, oh no, I'm not. I wanted to be an aerospace engineer is what I wanted.
Aerospace engineer.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I wanted to design.
Trying to fly close to the Lord.
Yeah. But I did end up going to Bible college, and you know, I really fell in love with ministry, and really, even when I went to Bible college, I thought I'd be a missionary in China or something, and that didn't end up being the case. God has a sense of humor, and he sent me back to Northeast Kansas, and I am not even 40 minutes from where I grew up. And so I'm not in exactly the same town, but I'm in the same neck of the woods. And I've been in this church that I'm in now for almost 24 years. And I love doing this. This is my first calling, is to help families, to teach them about Jesus, to do that kind of thing. That's what I'm most interested in. But like I said, I got to where I really fell in love with cops and the burden that they carry. And I'm like, man, I really feel like I can take what I've learned from these different relationships and I can apply this in an intelligent way, because you see a lot of military families and law enforcement families that feel ostracized. They feel alienated because people don't understand them, and they call everything by the wrong name and the wrong rank and the wrong, you know, technical jargon. they say everything wrong, and the family just feels more and more isolated. And I'm like, well, I'm a history buff. You know, I've never been police, but I can tell the difference between a sergeant and a major. And so let me figure out, you know, who is who, and call things by the correct names and do my best to understand. And it took me a little while, but I feel like I overcame that learning curve and became a culturally competent helper, where, you know, I could walk in and speak the lingo and help translate the lingo to, you know, the citizens. And that liaison function is another one that I do that a lot. I was just on a homicide scene the other day, and I was explaining, you know, police procedures to the family and trying to help them understand why everything was taking so long and why the CSI was letting their loved one lay there on the sidewalk. Well, that's not disrespect. That's the utmost respect. Right. We're going to get everything right, and we're not going to let a single thing slip through our fingers if we can help it. And sometimes I fall into that liaison role.
And we need somebody to fill that role, brother. So growing up, I always forget what it's called. Denomination growing up, because I grew up Pentecostal. So when you said country folk, my mind automatically went back to growing up. Holy rollers speaking in tongues, people doing backflips over the pews, running around the church like the walls of Jericho. And I mean, and like you said, I mean, I was in church Sunday through Sunday. I mean, every time the doors were open, we were there. What was your church like?
I grew up a lot more restrained. My family, they're all English and German farmers, and so very, very conservative, very restrained. You know, not very. Trying to think of the right word, not flamboyant, but just not as charismatic as some other Christians are. And so what we, you know, I grew up specifically in a Christian church, a non-denominational Christian church. And so we just preach the Bible and spend a lot of time doing Bible studies and going out and helping people. And that's, you know, it's very basic Christianity. And frankly, as I've gotten older, I've become more attracted to that. I'm not really interested in all the denominational hierarchies and everything else. I don't want to play politics. I just want to read about Jesus and then apply that to my life. And that's where I'm coming from.
And that's how it should, that is the most basic thing that drives me crazy about religion is the infighting between Pentecostals, you know, Baptists, and I still get confused by it, you know, because I grew up Pentecostal. I really couldn't tell you what it means. I just know that's what I was. But my grandma always told me, she told me, she was like, just imagine it's a giant neighborhood and there's one store in the middle of the town and everybody's going to the same store to get what they need. They just got a different way to get there. That's the best way she did to me. And that's all I've gone with. And now we go to a non-denominational church and I'm happy. And guess what? It's not like how it was when I grew up and I'm okay with that. And I like it. It's very conservative and I absolutely love it. Now, have you been to it? Have you ever been to a black church before?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, I've spoken at a black church. So I've got fellow friends that are chaplains that are, you know, they'll invite me over to their church or something like that. And it is culturally different. It's interesting. Oh, yeah. They will let me get a lot more animated when I'm preaching than what I would typically do back at home. Preaching at home is typically more college professor lecture style, you know, and so it'll be a nice long sermon that's going to have footnotes and details and explanations and analysis. where when I've been in a black church, it's been an opportunity to just really, you know, touch on all the emotions. And that's been fun. It's been exciting. It's a nice little cultural exchange. It's hard though not to mimic how everyone else is speaking. And I tried not to slip into the black preacher cadence because that's not really how I preach. And I don't want to patronize anybody or whatever, but it is an opportunity to be more animated and more excited.
You got to put that little in the voice, and every time I sing, you got to get that roll.
I wouldn't dare.
Hey, when you do, I want to go back and watch the video. I want to see.
That's right.
Man, so that's great. So, okay, so you're growing up, you go to Bible college, but you had aspirations of being, what is it, an aeronautical engineer?
Yeah, an aerospace engineer, somebody that designed airplanes and rockets and that kind of thing. I was a math nerd in high school. I actually took a test in high school and won a trip for me, my teacher, and some other students to Disney World. I was the number one in the state of Kansas and tested in this. It was a computer science mathematics test that I took. And so I was kind of a nerd. I had scholarships to go to other schools and whatever. And I gave all that up and decided to go to Bible college instead. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. What was that pull like that drew you into Bible school when you really wanted to go do thing? What did that feel like?
I had done a couple missionary trips, short-term missionary trips in high school. And I felt, especially on the second one, I was in the Philippines and I was in Manila and out in the jungles of Abra, there on the island of Luzon. And I felt like, you know, I'm good at this. I think I can speak, I can teach. And, you know, I was a high school student, but I felt like, man, I feel like I can do this. And that was a revelation to me. But then I was back home and was actually at a youth conference, and the speaker made a challenge, said, hey, there's people here who need to give their life to Jesus, but there's also some people here who need to give their future to Jesus and actually, you know, go into ministry and be a missionary or a preacher or a youth minister or something. And it hit me like a brick wall. And I remember my girlfriend with me at the time, who I'm now married to, we've been together for 30 years or more. And I remember crying to her. I'm like, I don't want to do this. I could have a successful career doing something in the math and sciences. You know, I don't know if I want to preach at a church. It really frightened me. But I thought, well, maybe I could do something exciting and go overseas as a missionary. And I really thought I would do that. I thought I'd go back to the Philippines or to China or Japan. And I thought I'd go to that part of the world and I would translate the Bible and work on a computer and occasionally preach a sermon once in a while. And I thought, you know, I'll do the technical stuff over on the mission field. And God just laughed. He laughed. Within a year, I was teaching youth group at a small country church in Missouri. And then it eventually led me here. And I, like I said, I preach every Sunday and teach adult classes and do all that stuff. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. I love police chaplaincy, but I love the church even more. And I can't imagine not working in the church. I'd ultimately do it for free. If I won the lottery that I never play, I would just, you know, donate my church salary back to the church again. And I would just keep doing this for free, basically, if I had the opportunity.
So I like it because I feel the same way about policing. But as we know, with anything, with every job, there is always a nightmare portion to what you do. Is there anything of when you got into ministry that caught you off guard that you just weren't ready for, that kind of made it hard for you or made you question?
Yeah, absolutely. The counseling. I was not prepared as a 20-something minister to talk to a woman my grandmother's age about her being molested as a child. Ooh. I was not prepared for that. That really shook me, that normal, happy, healthy-looking people are carrying around these terrible things, this baggage, this trauma that they live with every day. And I thought that was one person in 100. I was not ready for it to be like every third person. And and those are just the ones I knew about. And I was like, wow, it's everybody carrying around these horrible, horrible things. And I didn't think about me helping on that personal level. I imagined that I would stand up in a pulpit and give really good exposition of the Bible, and people would learn and appreciate and change, and they would do that elsewhere, apart from me. I wasn't ready for them to come to me and say, hey, I need you, Pastor, to wrestle with me through this. I need you to sit here in the ashes of my life. Everything's burned down. I need you to sit here and grieve and cry with me, and it's not going to get better today. It's not going to get better next week. The Lord will make it better someday, maybe, but it's not, it's just going to be miserable and hard right now. And I was not prepared for that.
I mean, it's the same when you put a 18 or 21 year old kid out on the streets for the first time as a cop, mm-hmm. and he's in a domestic and he ain't even had a girlfriend yet, you know? It's like, how do you navigate that?
Yeah. Well, this is where cops and ministers overlap. A lot. We see everybody on their worst day. People who are happy and healthy and wealthy don't come talk to the preacher, and they typically don't call the cops. You know, it's the people having trouble. It's the people who are fighting. It's the people who are in crisis. They are the ones who come for help, and they don't usually come for help until it's really, really, really bad. And so, the police officer and the pastor are in a similar, they run in similar circles because they're seeing everybody in their worst times, and they get exposed to the very worst of human behavior. And that causes a secondary trauma that you know, affects us all. And you think, well, yeah, look at the divorce rate and the suicide rate and the alcoholism rate among cops. Well, you might be surprised to see what the suicide rate, alcoholism rate, divorce rate are among preachers. It's pretty bad too. And so, there's a lot of trauma.
Never would have figured that.
Gets hidden. It gets hidden. The alcoholism is totally wrapped up. You know, nobody sees it. And when a minister gets divorced, or you know, he dies by suicide or something like that, the churches don't advertise that. They just like, oh, that's tragic. And we kind of cover it up and push it aside and like, oh, that's something that happened over there. And there's a very strong pressure in church culture to put on a smile and pretend like everything's fine. Yes. And I, that
Jesus don't fix it. It's okay.
Oh, That inauthentic fakeness is the worst thing in any church culture. And I think it's important that people come in and say, hey, that's we can't do this. We need to not have this country club atmosphere. We need to have a atmosphere of a hospital that we're all people who are wounded, mm-hmm. and we admit it. And we don't pretend like we're perfect. We're here for a reason, because we need to see the great physician. We need to see the doctor. And I like to tell people that we're beggars telling other beggars where to find bread. And that kind of humility is the right thing to adopt as a culture in a church. And I also think it's the right kind of atmosphere to attract first responders. Because I tell you what, if you are going to have a fake atmosphere at church, the first people who are going to see through it are those police officers. Now, police officers are going to know that's fake, and they're going to reject it, and they're going to run away from it. And they might want to go to church, but not a church where everybody's fake.
Absolutely. So you become a chaplain. What was the process like you actually becoming a chaplain? And what was that decision, the decision behind that like? That's not well, decision to be
made. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I got into it on the death notification level, and I thought, you know, I already do this. I can break bad news to people and not have it rip my heart out every single time. I am conditioned to this. I've got 20 years of experience. I can, you know, I felt like the entry point was reasonable for me. But it's funny, the actual process of becoming a first responder chaplain, it is different in every single agency. There's a lot of effort to try to standardize what a police chaplain is across the country, but it's every agency can take it or leave it. And so in my city, in Kansas City, Kansas, there was already a chaplains association. And so there were chaplains who had been around for 20, 30, 40 years, and the police department had this long standing relationship with them. They had policies already written. It was all established already. So it was just a matter of me coming on board and saying, hey, I'd like to join this group, and then meeting their requirements. I went and got some training, and I had, you know, at that point, 20 plus years of pastoral experience. I was already ordained. I had a lot of the boxes already checked. And so it's just a matter of them kind of running me through background checks and talking to my neighbors and that kind of thing to verify that I was safe to be given access.
I'm sure you had that with flying colors. If you wouldn't have, you wouldn't be here on this podcast.
Well, I remember the detective called me. He's like, "You got anything on your record?" I said, "Man, I think I had a speeding ticket like 10 years ago. I'm sorry, I don't have anything more interesting." And he just laughed at me.
Yeah. Man, so here's one thing I always wanted to ask a chaplain. I never have, but so you are a Christian, but you are a chaplain. And I don't think a lot of people realize that chaplains deal with people, cops, and people from all different walks of life. You got Catholics, Muslims, you know, Seventh-day Adventists. I mean, the list goes on. Agnostics, atheists. Yep. So how do you, as a chaplain, when you're going into these situations and you're talking to an officer that might be Muslim, how do you get on a level with these people who don't have the same beliefs as you? How does that work within the chaplaincy?
Well, there's a couple different levels. I mean, on the personal level, I think my faith as a Christian actually is a huge benefit to me, because in Christianity, we're told to love our enemies. And so even if somebody is a dyed-in-the-wool atheist, they hate religious people, they're not really a problem for me, because I'm told to love them. And that's what I've always been taught. I don't have to change. I don't have to be fake. I was always told to love my enemies. So I will go do good for them regardless of what they believe. And if they are of a sort that might not like me in return, that doesn't really matter, because as a Christian, that's, you know, I don't have any enemies I'm supposed to treat badly. I only have enemies I'm supposed to love. So as a Christian, I feel, and chaplaincy has emerged primarily from a Christian history. You go all the way back to early medieval, like really Roman period France, where you have Saint Martin of Tours, who was a Roman soldier who gave up being a soldier to give his cape to a person who was sick, or, you know, they were out in the weather and being exposed, that kind of thing. And so he's like, I'm going to have mercy on this poor, pitiful person. And that cape is the word that it was a cape with a hood, and that cape, the word cap in Latin means head. And so that's where we get the word captain, but it's also through French where we get the word chaplain. And so chaplain is from the cape that he wore. And so there were chaplains who helped the poor, advised the king, accompanied the army, really all through most of Christian history. And there are religious officials with other cultures and other religions, but it came primarily through Christianity. And when you get up to the United States, where we have a separation of church and state, and we have to be careful about promoting a particular religion, we have case law that guides us that, don't worry, we haven't discovered some sort of flaw, some sort of fly in the ointment where, okay, all those army chaplains are going to have to be fired. No, there's Supreme Court case law that takes care of all this. And specifically, there's a case called Lemon versus Kurtzman, where I think it was actually a public school hiring Catholic nuns to teach was the original impetus behind it. But what do you do if a government agency, part of the government, is going to pay or otherwise endorse a religious person? Well, like a nun, right? So what do you do? Well, there's rules. And basically, as a chaplain, I can't, representing the police department, I cannot go to you and evangelize you. I can't force my religion on you. Now, if you want to come to me, if you're a citizen or if you're a police officer, if you want to come to me and ask me about something, then, you know, all bets are off. I can talk about whatever I want, but I can't come to you and force it on you, right? Otherwise, it would be the government endorsing a religion, and that's something we don't do in the United States. So I am free to be a Christian. I am free to act as a Christian. I just can't force my religion on you. And frankly, I don't do that. That's not the effective way to win over police officers.
Anybody
heavy-handed and walk in and start preaching at them, beat them over the head,
throwing Bibles.
Oh yeah, stand up on a
chair. You're all going to hell.
Going to go to hell if they don't change their ways. That you will get to do that as a police chaplain exactly one time, and then you will have your access revoked, and you will never be let in the police station again. So you have to be smart about this. And after several years, I've been a chaplain in my department now for about 6 years. After 6 years, I have officers that come to me and they do marriage counseling. They come to me just to vent, just to, you know, like, man, I just got to talk about stuff going on in my life. Sometimes they want to talk about traumatic things, and I'll be involved in like debriefings, or even just kind of let's stand at the car and do a quick defuse, debrief. You know, it's not a full debrief. It's just like, hey, let's just talk about what we all saw. Like, you know, that body was there for a week. That really stank, didn't it? Yeah. You know,
I had one of those a week ago, brother. I should have called you.
Man, the worst one I've ever had, man. Just recently. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, we knew the guy.
Yeah.
And that's what made it worse.
Yeah. Man, so but that's something to follow up on. And hey, let's talk about it, because I feel like God made us to be people who tell stories. We think of ourselves in terms of story. We are communicators. God is a communicator. He communicated to us. And if we can story tell our trauma, then that's just got to be the healthiest thing. I think that's the best part of therapy, you know, going to a clinician and doing therapy is talking and having them listen and being able to hear your story and develop your story and figure out, well, what did this mean that I saw that abused child or that dead body or the gore at I'm thinking car wrecks, but you know, really like dead bodies at train crossings, man, there's just nothing worse than a body that's been hit by a train. Yeah. And so that's, you know, how do I process that? And stories and talking to people, I think that's how God made us. And so I'll get to where I've got officers that'll come and talk to me about that kind of stuff. And it took a long time to get behind the badge to earn that trust. And I have to start over with every recruit that comes out of the academy. I got to start with zero. And maybe they're favorably disposed to me because they went to church and I remind them of their pastor. Or maybe maybe they went to church and I remind them of their pastor, and it's the, and that keeps them far away, you know? So whatever it is, it's going to take me time to earn their trust. And that's just how it works. I got to be patient.
So speaking of earning trust, what is the biggest challenge that you face as a police chaplain today that you deal with on a regular?
The biggest challenge, I mean, the challenge is within our officers, because that's, I should probably clarify, there are a lot of police chaplains in the world, and some of them are kind of administrative chaplains. They organize resources, and they know all the people at the different funeral homes and the different churches in town, and they're just kind of a resource person. There's other chaplains who are ceremonial, and they show up to pray at all of the city functions. And so if the mayor's going to speak, or we're going to have a graduation or a funeral, they show up to do the ceremonial functions. And that's a type of chaplain. You have chaplains that are geared toward the community, and those community chaplains show up on the scene of a homicide or an F5 tornado or whatever it may be. And they are good at, like, usually they're FEMA certified and Red Cross certified. And those chaplains know how to help in a crisis with the community. But I'm a different type of chaplain. And it's not that I don't do all those other things, but my focus is I'm a patrol chaplain. And so I was trained by military chaplains. They said a chaplain jumps out of the airplane with paratroopers, and a chaplain lives on the ship with the sailors. And so if you're going to be a police chaplain, you go out there and you get into that roll call, and you get in that police station, and you learn everybody's names, and you go on ride-alongs, and you don't spend an hour on a ride-along. You spend 8 hours or 10 hours or 12, whatever your shift is. You spend the whole shift, and you learn all the equipment in that car, and you understand what the 10-4, you know, all the 10 code, you know, codes are on the radio, and you learn their culture, and you learn them as individuals. And so when they need help, they don't have to go to a stranger. And so you build a relationship with them, which limits your capacity, because a ceremonial chaplain can be a ceremonial chaplain to thousands or millions, where a patrol chaplain probably has an upper cap of only about 100, maybe 200 at the most, that he could really know all of their names and know their aspirations for their career, who their families are, you know, are they going through a divorce? Do they have a sick child? There's a human being can only know just so many people at that level. And so I'm a patrol chaplain, and I do about 180 roll calls a year. I do ride alongs just as frequently as I can. Almost any week that I'm not preaching a sermon because our other minister's preaching or we have a missionary or something like that, I'm usually doing a ride along that week. And so if I'm in the car for 8 hours, it's because I'm not preaching on Sunday. And I've got the little bit extra time. So I'm a patrol chaplain. Can you take reports? I do reports, but nobody sees the chaplain's report. Nobody wants to see the chaplain. I give a report. I have a form I fill out. We still do it on paper. And so I'm the last person in America doing a paper police report. But I fill out a chaplain report, and I give that to my head chaplain. It goes in a file box. And I suppose if the police chief wanted to see it, it's hidden away there at the head chaplain's house. But I have that long-term relationship that I'm building with these officers. And you asked earlier, you know, what's the biggest thing I'm facing among my officers? It's probably alcohol abuse. I think that's probably it's always in my top three, and it's often the number one thing, because they have not been taught how to cope. They've not been taught how to be resilient. Some of them naturally have resiliency, but many of them, if they really get rattled, the culture tells them to drink. So a lot of them become alcoholics at a very young age. And some of them are very functional alcoholics. They can, frankly, probably survive their entire career drinking heavily, but many of them cannot. So alcoholism is really always at the top of my list. As far as like being a chaplain, I think the biggest hindrance for most chaplains, I've not run into very much of it, but for most chaplains, it's admin, which is what a lot of police officers would say.
Oh, brother,
you know, what, speaking, what's the biggest stress? Yeah. What's the biggest stress? It's the administration. You know, man, that guy was great when he was a sergeant, but now he's a major and I can't live with him. Yeah. And so it's that problem where a chaplain is a qualified helper who comes in and walks alongside these police officers, and some chaplains are having admin interfere with that and prevent it and create obstacles to it. And boy, you would think in 2024, anything related to officer wellness would get a green light.
But you have
people that are mistrustful of helpers, including chaplains. Maybe they had a bad experience with a therapist or with a chaplain or with somebody else, and they just don't trust anybody, and they're going to shut out the chaplains, where the chaplains are the embedded helpers. And that, I hear that all the time from chaplains around the country that are like, well, we were doing great until the new sheriff said we can't come into the sheriff's office anymore. And I don't have an answer to that, because frankly, we're there at their will, at their pleasure. If they don't want us there, we can't get in the door.
Absolutely. So you consider yourself a patrol chaplain. Do you do any additional training outside of just being clergy, like first aid, or God forbid, go to the range and shoot and all that as well?
Yeah. I do. I'm an avid shooter. Up until COVID, I was putting 3,000 rounds a year through my carry, ooh, my carry gun.
Well, you ain't nothing so to play with, ain't you?
Yeah. No, I don't keep that up anymore. That's back when 9mm was like 14 cents a round. I mean, now that's a, you know, I cut back pretty severely the last 3 or 4 years, but yeah, I do. I've done first aid training. I've done all kinds of critical incident stress management training. That's a really common category of chaplain training. You know, how do we help people and manage ourselves in a critical incident? I go to trainings all the time. And so, you know, nowadays it's kind of handy. I can kind of kill two birds with one stone. I can go get the training and go promote my podcast at the same event. So I've got a table out front, but then as soon as class starts, I run in there and start taking notes. And because it's always trying to learn.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and there's a lot to learn, except because you're in two different worlds where, you know, policing,
yeah,
but also clergy. And that's hard to marry together.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are a rough and rambunctious group of individuals. And are you an atmosphere changer? You know, I'm sure for religious people, that's when you got somebody that's like very, I'm not gonna say holy, but very in tune with the Lord. And when they walk into a room, the jokes stop, yeah, the inappropriate jokes stop, the cursing stops, and all of a sudden it's just like everybody peps up. Oh, hey, sir, how you doing, sir? Do you have that effect when you walk into a roll call?
I wish the bad jokes stopped. Oh my goodness, the things I've heard. You get two kinds of cops. You get two kinds of cops. One is, you know, he probably in his personal life didn't use very much off-color humor. He didn't use a lot of foul language until he became a cop, and then he just acclimated to the culture. And so he's dropping the F-bombs every sentence, and he got used to it and didn't think about it until the chaplain walked in the room. And then he's embarrassed and he stops and he's like, oh my goodness, what did I just say? And I'm, you know, sorry, chap. You know, I get that all the time. But the other half have taken it on as an identity. I am a rough man. I am coarse and vulgar. And I am, you know, I am the thing in the dark that you should be afraid of. And so the chaplain walks in and they actually amp up the foul language and the corny joking. Wow. And I think it's a stiff arm. I think they're a little bit afraid of me. And so they try to stiff arm me with like being really coarse and vulgar, but frankly, I've heard it all. And so I don't blush. I don't gasp, you know, and clutch my pearls. You're not going to say anything I've not heard, frankly. And so I'm pretty unflappable. And what they eventually all learn is that they can just be themselves. And I think that I still have an effect on them when I walk in, but I try to have as small an effect as possible because it's not about me. You know, I am there to show support, and I'm going to keep coming back until you get used to me, so that if you have a crisis, I'm already familiar and I can be one of those helpers that you might turn to. I'm one of the tools in the toolbox that you can utilize. If I alienate you and judge you and look down my nose every time you say an F-bomb, man, I'm just ruining my own, you know, access and opportunity. And so a chaplain cannot do that. Although there are chaplains who have done that, but they don't typically last very long.
You know, I tell people that's kind of the biggest struggle as a man of faith and a Christian is the Bible verse where it says there shall not be no coarse joking. I'm struggling. I need you to pray for me. I've been military and law enforcement. And so I participate in so much of the, I'm not going to say extremely vulgar stuff, but it's just always been a part of my personality, the harshness and the coarseness of everything that I deal with. So pray for me on that one, chap. Oh, did I lose you? I think you froze up on me. Yep. He froze up on me. All right. So let me see if we can get him back here. So hope everybody's still hanging in there and everybody's all right. So I'm going to wait and see if he comes back on the podcast. I'm sure he will, you know, so we're having a couple technical difficulties, but I've told many people many and many times that I am a Christian in the faith, but there's no such thing as a perfect Christian, and there's no such thing as a perfect person. Everybody has a struggle. Everybody's got something that they're dealing with. And a lot of people, a lot of Christians, they try to hide their struggles and they try to hide their sins. And me personally, I do not. I'm just to the point to where I don't want to look perfect on Sunday and then just live like hell through the rest of the week, yo. But on Sunday, I look good. So I've stayed away from that because I don't want to give off the perception of I'm the perfect person, and I don't want to give off this perception that I have it all together, and I just don't. So I hope that's my battle, is I constantly struggle with the things that come out of my mouth. I say, because I like to joke and I like to laugh with my boys. So that's just kind of my struggle. And I tell people I'm open and honest about it, because every person you look at has something they're battling with. And I tell everybody all the time, I don't trust a man without some sort of struggle or some sort of vice in this life. Some people it's alcohol. Yeah. Some people it's pornography. Some people it's work. Some people it's money. It's something. Everybody's got something that they're dealing with. Even the man of God. And I'm a strong man of God. But I know God looks down upon me all the time and says, Dex, I know you know better. And I'm like, Lord, I know. I'm sorry. I'll try not to do it again. But he knows I'm going to do it again. And so we got everybody. We got him back. So there we go, chap. So, man, we're not picking up from where we left off. But we just had this horrible incident in Mecklenburg, North Carolina last week, you know, where this individual shot and killed four officers. I believe it was three task force officers. And like a deputy U.S. Marshal, and I think
deputy marshal.
Yeah, deputy marshal. And I served on the marshal's task force. When I heard this, man, I was pissed. And the first thing I wanted to do was just yell and scream, like, why and why again? You as the chaplain, when you come across such a major situation where it's not just one life lost is hard to deal with. But what is your plan going to a scene where you have multiple officers hurt? And multiple civilians and people hurt, and then you got the family there. It's just pure chaos. How do you walk in that as a man of faith, and what kind of plan do you go into with that?
Yeah, my personal theology, which I believe is what the Bible teaches, is that in this world we will have trouble. I do not expect things to always go well. I do not expect to be free from grief or tragedy. I don't expect that it's, you know, the norm for everything to go well. I understand that there's going to be terrible things in this world. And I feel like my personal experience has taught me that. And I really think that's what the Bible teaches. I don't understand these Christians who walk around like, well, just become a Christian, then all your problems will go away. Man, I don't find that in the Bible. You know, show me the chapter and verse where it says that. Jesus is like preparing us for things to be difficult, for things to be hard, for things to be tragic. This world can do almost anything to you, including take your life away. And so that's why we place our hope in something higher than that. This world could kill me, but I'm still going to win. And so, I'm not going to trust that things will just go well here on Earth. So I hate it when these horrible things happen. We have had incidences here in Kansas City of more than one officer killed on the same day. We've seen tragic events and you know, heartbreaking tragedies. But I don't presume that won't happen. So I'm prepared in advance. I'm not shocked and personally angry at God that why would he let this happen? I already know that it's very possible that, you know, shootings and car accidents and disease and all kinds of other things can come out of nowhere and take away the people that we love. So I'm prepared for that. Now, as a chaplain dealing with officers, there's always like the second guessing that happens. A task force, you know, when you're doing fugitive apprehension, sometimes you don't have the luxury of planning out the perfect plan. I'm pretty sure it was maybe General Patton that said that a violent plan executed now is better than a perfect plan executed next week.
Mm-hmm. And no plan survives first contact.
No. And so you have the people, even inside the agencies involved, who are going to play Monday morning quarterback. And they're going to second guess after the fact all of the decisions that were made because they didn't come out perfectly. And they're going to judge it by its results, where in reality, sometimes just bad luck comes in. And you get made, or someone gets the draw on you, and that's, there was no training that was going to overcome that. There was no tactic that was going to perfectly accommodate all of those things. Sometimes it's just things go south, and it's nobody's fault. It just happened that way. And so you have to overcome the interior, the officers arguing with each other and second guessing and criticizing each other, saying, well, if we'd done it this way, or if we'd done it that way, or if this person had been in charge, or if we'd had this one magic bullet, you know, that the one piece of equipment or the one strategy that I preferred, it wouldn't have happened this way. And that is something I'm tuned into, because that's going to create strife and division when we need to be unified. And we need everybody to be supporting one another. And instead, some personalities are going to jump in and start tearing down and saying, well, if I had been picked to be the leader of that unit, it would have gone differently. Man, we do not need that right now. And so some of that is, you know, hey, why don't you come over here and tell me and vent all of your frustrations to me instead of to the group? Because you're just going to cause division if you say that to everybody else. And so come talk to me and I can let you get all that off your chest. And we don't need to be airing that out, especially on social media or somewhere, you know, let's just talk about that privately. And I can kind of defuse some of the ambitious Monday morning quarterbacks. I can kind of defuse some of the angry that I got passed over for promotion type people. And some of the people that are just naysayers, and they think they criticize everything. Well, of course that happened because, you know, our agency is terrible and everything bad happens here. And of course somebody got killed. Well, man, why don't you tell the chaplain about that? You know, you know, but don't spread that everywhere else. That negative is like a cancer.
It really is, right, man. Now. It really is. And the time I've seen the most negativity has been since 2020. Riots and protesting with Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. During that time period, were you all having riots out in your area during that time period?
A little bit in Kansas City, Missouri. We had a few cars overturned and set on fire. We really got by pretty, you know, we didn't have a lot of the severe stuff that you saw in Louisville and in a lot of other places like in the Pacific Northwest. We were braced for it. We were ready for it, but we didn't have much. And really in Kansas City, Kansas, where I'm at, there's two Kansas cities. Everybody doesn't know that. But we're right across the river from each other, both with the same name, one in Kansas, one in Missouri. The one in Kansas is way better. But the one in Missouri is better known. And that's where the sports teams are. You know, it's the bigger, more famous city. But they had just a little bit, and it really passed pretty quickly. And there were other times where riots popped up in places that it didn't ever emerge in Kansas City. So that was fortunate. But yeah, we were ready for it.
Man, well, I'm glad y'all didn't have to go through that, man. Well, have you ever had any moments on a crime scene where you're having to kind of be between a group of angry civilians and officers?
Yeah. Kansas City, Kansas is interesting. We have the same kind of homicide rates and racial division and whatever that a city much larger than us would have. We could be compared to places like Baltimore and Washington, D.C. and some others, even though Kansas City, Kansas, you know, population wise, we're not that big of a city, but we have like inner city. We have a Spanish part of town. We have a Black part of town. We have a white part of town. And there's a lot of the big city problems that we encounter. We have cities adjacent to us that are twice our size that only have one homicide a year, where we have dozens a year. And like I said, we're not a very large city. And so we see a lot of action. Some cops come to our department because they want a higher tempo. They want to be involved. They want to, you know, see all the action. Oh, yeah. That lasts for a little while. Then I realize, you know, I might reconsider that job out in the suburbs.
Me. I had enough.
And so
I'm good.
And so I've been on a few scenes where I don't doubt at all the suspect was standing at the yellow tape. And he was eyeing us and, you know, hands in his pockets and staring us down and whatever. I don't doubt that at all. I don't feel like I've ever been in tremendous danger, or at least none that I will admit to my wife. I have felt very safe. I've felt like my officers protected me. I don't wear a vest, and a lot of chaplains do. And maybe I should. That is something. If I were to change anything in my operating, you know, and how I operate right now, I might add a vest. I don't do that currently. And I've got a friend, and he's a chaplain in Indiana, and he is apoplectic that I don't wear a vest. He's like, how can you go on these scenes and go make these notifications at 3 a.m? Because we've had chaplains in our city have a gun pulled on them. But I never have, and so I. that's
armor of God, right? Of
looking at it, yeah.
Armor of God, the breastplate of righteousness.
Yeah, breastplate of righteousness. Good. That's right. So I could see myself if you catch me a year or two from now and I'm wearing a vest. That is something I have been contemplating for a long time, but I feel safe. In our cars, there's a marking on the side of each patrol car that indicates whether or not there's Kevlar in the doors of that car. And I have more than once stood behind the door between me and the angry crowd. And I'm just like, I'm just going to stand back here behind this Kevlar, you know, and if you need me, I'll run right up there. But until then, I'm just going to stand back here and stuff. Yeah.
Grab the PA and start rattling off some Bible verses.
Yeah.
Man. So we're going to get ready to bring this to an end, but here's one question I want to end with. Because I think it's important for everybody, especially as men in this world. So everybody has somebody that they can turn to. Well, supposed to have people that they can turn to. Police officers have the chaplain to turn to. Me, I have my wife I can turn to. Who do you, as a man of God, turn to outside of God himself, outside of Jesus? Who do you turn to when you need to unload? Because you carry the weight of the world on your shoulders as well. But you also carry more than that, because you carry people's spiritual lives and souls with you when you go to do your job. And that's a lot of weight to carry. And I know that burden is heavy, but when that burden gets heavy for you, how do you unload that? And where do you go to unload it? And who do you go to?
Yeah, I had a bit of a crisis here not quite a year ago. Last summer, I was visiting my in-laws. I was in Kentucky. And was visiting my in-laws' house, and we were watching a TV show. And if you'd asked me up to that point, I'd been like, hey, I've got, you know, 25 plus years of ministry and 5 years of being a police chaplain in a pretty active, busy city. I'm fine. I don't dream about the dead bodies that I see. I don't, you know, I'm fine. It called out to homicides and suicides and accidents, and I'm fine. Well, I wasn't fine. And I had a bit of an emotional breakdown during that visit, we were watching a TV show and I started crying uncontrollably. And then it went up a level and I started having intrusive thoughts. I started picturing this one particular dead woman, and she wasn't the worst dead body I've ever seen. It wasn't even the most recent dead body I'd ever seen, but I couldn't control not seeing her. She was just as in front of me as anything. I've never had anything like that. I'm the one that helps people with problems like this. Right. I've never had something like that myself. Well, I had to call a timeout, and I'm like, we can't keep watching this show. And in fact, we were watching The Chosen. We were watching that show about Jesus. Yeah. And it wasn't anything about the show. I mean, my in-laws love the British crime mystery, you know, murder mystery shows. And every time we're with them, we're watching some British people kill each other up in the mansion, and you know, whatever. And did the butler do it? And you would think that would provoke me, and that had no effect. But instead, I'm watching Jesus on screen, and I just had this episode. And so I'm like, hey, why don't you guys go, you know, out on the lake and do your thing, you know, go out on the boat. I'm going to go take a walk in the woods and I'm going to make some phone calls. And so I called another chaplain in Detroit, Michigan that I knew I could talk to. And he's got the training and the experience to help with this. And then I called another chaplain out in Los Angeles, and those two phone calls made a huge difference because they were able to walk me through what I was doing and what had happened and what I was going to do, you know, what's my game plan moving forward. Being able to talk through the emotions I was having, the experience I've had. Again, I think God made us to be storytellers, and we can storytell our trauma and get that out. And I had a long afternoon of talking to those guys, and I haven't had another episode like that since. It's been almost a year. And so it was extremely helpful, but I had to take my own medicine because I tell cops all the time to go talk to somebody. I'm like, if you don't want to talk to me, talk to a different chaplain, talk to a therapist, talk to a pastor, talk to a mentor, talk to a friend, you know, talk to any qualified person that can come, that can help you. But I wasn't necessarily doing that myself. And we talk about police officers being the trash can that everybody dumps their garbage into. Well, the chaplain comes along and he's the trash can you dump all the other trash cans into. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't considered, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to take my own advice, and I'm going to have to turn to other chaplains and to other ministers. And they may be some of the only people who can understand the stuff I've seen. And so I talk to them and I try to keep that up. I have a good stable of people that I can reach out to that have similar experiences in similar cities. And I've developed relationships with some ministers that they are not chaplains, but they, you know, they deal with people's troubles, and they experience that secondary trauma with the things that they go through and the people that they're helping go through. So I've developed those relationships to try to, you know, have my resources in place so I don't have a breakdown like that again.
Well, I'm glad you were able to navigate that with some good people in your life, man. Cause I tell people, you have to have solid people in your corner, and it's such a hard thing to do these days. You know, I told my wife all the time, like, I'm looking for a father figure in my life that I've been needing one for years. And, you know, it's sad because I have a father that lives 15 minutes from me, but I have nothing to do with the man. And every time my pastor goes up on stage, I love my pastor, and she's just looking at him. She was like, you were wishing he was your father, don't you? I was like, absolutely. Because he's like, he's just such a great guy. So shout out to my pastor, Dave Hastings, man. I freaking love this guy. Great guy, man. But it's so important, you know, that we have people to unload on. I mean, like I said, when you're taking the brunt of the world's problems, you can only carry so much. We're humans. And I'm glad that people to hear you, a chaplain, a man of God, still has struggles, because like you said earlier, a lot of people put on that front that I'm good, I'm okay. Yep. At the end of the day, you're still a man. Yep. And we as men, we have ego and we have pride, and we don't want to be the one to go ask for help, but we all need help at the end of the day. And that is why I'm so thankful that we have chaplains around us. I mean, I remember when I got blown up in Iraq, the first person I wanted there besides my mom and my family was the chaplain, Chaplain Juan. I was like, man, where's the chaplain? And when he came to me, when I was laying in the hospital bed in Baghdad, I just felt a sense of peace. Like, man, all right, chaplain's here. I should be good from now on. So I can't thank you enough for what you do for the boys and girls in blue. and for the community, and not just us. And I mean, that's, I think you all are such a tool that we leave out all the time. Like, we do these AARs of what we could have done better on this scene and that, and that's it. What are the materials we need? And we go through the checklist of stuff, and nobody ever says, call the chaplain. When we're on a scene where a three-year-old died, nobody thinks to call the chaplain. And so that is always one of my go-to things where I'm like, hey, I got chaplain's number in my stamp. He's actually going to come on to my podcast probably in a couple of weeks, my chaplain, Gary Gissner. And he actually wrote a book, too. So he was going to be a DEA guy. He's retired. He was going to all this super, super squirrel stuff. And God called him to be a chaplain, man. And I am so glad we have him. He knows exactly what we go through. Just like you, man. So I said, we can't thank you enough, man. And I can't thank you enough for being up for coming on the podcast. Sorry it took so long, but told you I wasn't going to forget about you.
I'm thrilled to be here. Absolutely.
Absolutely, man. So tell us about the podcast. Where people could find you, where people could follow you, and how they can support you.
Yeah, the podcast is called Hey Chaplain. It's the Police Wellness Podcast. And it's, I guarantee you, it's the number one police chaplain podcast in the world, because I'm pretty sure it's the only police chaplain podcast in the world. But it's growing, and it's becoming one of the bigger, you know, officer wellness podcasts. And it's not a religious podcast per se. I have guests that will talk about their faith once in a while. I kind of slip that in at the end of the interview. But most of the time, I mean, I'll talk to anybody. I'll talk to an atheist or a Buddhist or a Baptist or anybody in between. It's not really a religious podcast. It's an officer wellness podcast. So we're going to talk about leadership and stress and family and career and different jobs in law enforcement, and just talk about law enforcement culture. I don't do current events. I don't do any kind of news or anything like that. So all my content is evergreen. So you can go back and listen to my whole catalog, and 99% of the time, those shows are going to be just as relevant 2 or 3 years later as they were the day they were released. So that's the Hey Chaplain podcast. It's the Police Wellness podcast.
Yeah. So do you have any social media?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Facebook, but man, only because I absolutely had to. I hate social media.
It's toxic. It's horrible.
I'll put something up, you know, once a week, you know, on Instagram, and then link it over to Facebook. And people find me that way, and I appreciate that. I've got listeners in like 90 countries, and you know, I got people all around the world listening. But God bless you. Social media is such a toxic wasteland.
It really is, man.
I'll do the minimum to promote the show. That's what I'll do. And other than that, I don't try to spend very much time on there. Yeah.
No, that's the best way to stay sane is not doing it. And that's why my show hasn't grown as much, because I don't do what I need to do on social media to promote. And I deal with enough chaos out in the streets, and I don't want it on my phone every day I look at it.
If you produce daily content on 6 or 7 different platforms, you can grow a show, but I'm not
absolutely
willing to do that. I have a life. I already have 3 jobs. I don't need a fourth.
And I tell people, this is a hobby, and it's a time consuming hobby, but it's a great hobby because I get to speak with people like you. And I mean, the fact that I even got to meet you was just freaking phenomenal. So I'll probably be calling you for some more stuff. I mean, people don't know, but I've reached out to him periodically over the time we met, and he's checked on me.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
We talked about, man, teaching Sunday school and stuff like that, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Oh, brother, I wish you could have been there at Sunday school yesterday when we were teaching.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so funny. We were talking about Jesus being a great witness, and one of the questions was, like, how can we be a great witness for Jesus? And I don't know where my son came up with this. He said something about building a time machine and going back in time and into Jesus. And then this little white girl said to my son, well, you got to be careful. I wouldn't do that. You'd have been a slave.
Go back to Jesus' time, and the little white girl would have been a slave.
That's true.
And so, yeah.
But I told her, I was like, like, don't go back too far in time. Oh man, I'm telling you, man, it's just such a blessing. Like, that's why I like my church, because usually when places find out that I'm a police officer, they're like, hey, we want to bring you on a security team. And I'm like, man, I don't want to do security. This is the first place I've ever been where they were like, we see something in you more than just a gun and a big dude with muscles.
Yeah.
need people here to teach the youth. And I'm telling you, it is the most humbling thing I've ever done, and it is the greatest thing I do every other week, man. I freaking love it, man.
I love that. I love that. We've had more than once that we've been texting back and forth, and it's like, well, I got to get up and preach in the morning. You're like, well, I got to get up in a few hours and teach Sunday school. So,
yeah, it keeps me humble, man. It really does. It really does, man. And like I said, I think cops have to have something outside of work to keep them real and to keep focused. Everybody does. And if you're not going to church, I encourage anybody to. If you don't talk to your chaplain, I highly encourage you. Go talk to your chaplain. Get to know him. He's there for your benefit, just like Jared, man. You know, ladies and gentlemen, be sure to follow the Hey Chaplain podcast and give a shout out to my man, Jared, all right? Chap, I appreciate you having you on, man.
Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen. So, man, what a great show. What a great episode. That was awesome. Awesome. Just hearing a different perspective from somebody who goes in out on patrol. And their main focus is not necessarily fight crime, but to bring clarity and bring peace to chaotic situations. That is a special gift that a lot of people don't have and don't possess. And that's why God has blessed us with chaplains in this world, because, yeah, I can carry a gun and I can carry the word of God with me. But sometimes it's hard to quote Bible verses when you got a gun in your hand. That's not my immediate thought in that moment. But after the moment's over, guess what? You need to holster your gun. And sometimes you need to be able to holster your mind and all the emotions and things running through you. And sometimes that's hard to do because emotions get so wild and out of control, especially in this career field. But that's why we have chaplains that come to help us sort through the emotions and you know, answer those hard questions we ask ourselves all the time in this profession, man. We all need guidance. Everybody needs guidance. Even the chaplain needs guidance. And that's why I'm just so thankful that we have people like Chaplain Altick that does what he does for the boys and girls in blue, man. It's just a blessing to have people around that. And you can tell his level, his dedication. And then he's not just I'm just going to sit here and like throw out prayers. No, he's in the streets on patrol. And not just that, he's practicing like first aid and, you know, and shooting just in case it gets to that point, which I pray it never does for him. I pray it never does for any of us. But we all know it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And when it does come and when it does hit the fan, just know who you can always turn to. And that is your chaplain at your PD. And if you don't like your chaplain at your PD, trust me, there's other chaplains around everywhere. Chuck, we've had a couple weird, cringy chaplains on my old department where I was at before. He would come around and just rub everybody wrong, and we would all scatter. But we've also had a couple of chaplains that were absolute bros and just super good dudes, man. So I'm always thankful for the chaplain corps. And I pray that good men and women continue to come into the chaplaincy and continue to support us in our mission in providing and protecting the community and certain the communities we serve. But I don't let what they do go to waste. They're there for you. They're there for us. And I know you got your pride and your ego. You don't need help. I'm a hero. I don't need nobody. Trust me, man. At the end of the day, you can only take so much trauma in your life. You're going to have somewhere to dump it eventually. And what better person than your local chaplain? All right, ladies and gentlemen, so this has been the I Am Pitts podcast. I appreciate you all for tuning in. Sorry about the technical difficulties, but seriously, man, I appreciate you all for tuning in. Sorry about the time in between each show with a lot going on. Hey, I'm just thankful that you all are still coming and still tuning in. I'll tell you again, I can't thank you enough. So every email matters, every message matters, every show to share matters, everything matters, every download matters. You all matter to me, and I am thankful for each and every last one of you. So I appreciate you all, and I will be seeing you all on the next one. All right, y'all take care.